Hi, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hello.
Kara, do you have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So let's start with some light conspiracy. The president of Tanzania has not been seen in public for 2 weeks. At least one citizen who posted on social media that the president is likely ill was arrested under a cybercrime law that human rights groups have often criticized for being used to suppress freedom of expression in that country. The exiled opposition leader who lost a presidential election to Tanzania's current president in October claimed in a series of tweets that he had been flown to India in a critical condition due to COVID. The extent of Tanzania's COVID epidemic is largely unknown due to poor record-keeping. The missing president has made high-profile claims that it has been eliminated from Tanzania, cast doubt on COVID tests, and discouraged the use of masks. The U.S. will test its first hypersonic missile sometime in the next few weeks, a technology that critics say is, quote, a weapon in search of a mission. The idea of hypersonic missiles is that they move so quickly they can evade any ability to detect or shoot them down before they hit their targets, but ICBMs can already do that, and so the U.S. and Russia's increasing investment in this tech has been described as bizarre by military analysts familiar with the technology. Hypersonic weapons are also not covered by existing treaties designed to prevent arms races between countries, which perhaps explains their proliferation. Finally, Ronald DeFeo Jr., the man whose crimes in 1974 inspired the books and movie The Amityville Horror, has died in prison while serving a 25-to-life sentence for the murders of his mother, father, 2 sisters, and 2 brothers. The cause of death has not been determined. The story of The Amityville Horror was based in large part on the claims of the next family to occupy the home where DeFeo's crimes took place. Apparently, the paranormal activity inside was so intense that they were forced to flee less than a month after moving in. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right, light conspiracy. I like that. You know, there was a time that
just
when I heard about
sprinkling.
Right, a little dash, little dollop of conspiracy.
Yeah.
There was a time that I viewed this as being so foreign. And so far away from us, but I no longer view it like that. I view that we are kind of, that the whole world is going through this, especially when you say that they're casting doubts on COVID and,
yeah,
you know, there was so, you know, do we have such little faith in our leaders, for one, and then for two, do our leaders have such little faith in their ability to lead that they're going to pretend that a disease doesn't exist in order to hold on to their power?
Yeah, the answer to those questions, I think, has been shown to be a huge yes.
Yeah, it's just so weird and so disturbing, you know, that we live in this world where, I don't know. It's just so weird that it's happening here in the U.S. that every man is an island. And, you know, I've been watching a lot of Bill Maher lately, and he put it in a good way that, you know, historically, there was always the two sides here in the U.S. And the sides didn't agree, but they at least felt that the other side's existence was legitimate. But now we've gotten to this point where both sides have taken away the other side's legitimacy, and it's sort of like, I don't know, it's a little scary. I think it's a little scary.
Yeah.
But I don't mean scary like guns in the streets scary. I mean scary like the fall of the stability that we've all enjoyed.
Yeah. I guess I don't know that I agree that both sides have seen each other as, like, legitimate. I think if you look just at the middle, I think there used to be more of a middle and now there's not. But I think, you know, if you look at the far right and the far left, those have both always existed and they have both always
agreed, but they'd always been small enough to the point where it wasn't the mainstream thought.
Right, exactly.
Now the mainstream
I think those have both become the mainstream. And
right.
It is hard to see how the country just continues to exist like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would say that the stability the existence of quote unquote, like the central mainstream kind of thing in the past was due to some not great stuff. It was due to the fact that Congress was basically a good old boys club and that, you know, left or right, you could still basically agree on, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now we have much more transparency, so that doesn't happen as much, so we're just totally gridlocked. And it used to be, you know, there were like a couple news networks, right, that all basically pushed the same narrative. Like, is that ideal? I don't think so. I think it's good to have lots of perspectives, but we're seeing now we do have lots of perspectives, and the result is, you know, all these divisions have been laid bare, and it's like, how, now that we have the basically illegitimate glue that was holding the country together gone, why is the country holding? Why? Like, no one wants it to hold together.
Yeah, well, don't get me wrong. I'm not, like, advocating to go back to the way things were. I'm just saying that the change
is
noticeable.
Definitely.
Ability level for
and
all
it
of
is
us.
Scary, you know, because it's
that
like,
we need to do something about that.
Right, because how much longer can we limp along with, you know, Congress passes a bill every 8 years, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like, how much longer can we... You know, our laws are radically different in this state, you know, versus this state, but you can still cross the border, like, completely different philosophies of governing. I don't know. I think my radical, horrible opinion is that we probably need to just break up the country at some point, and it would be nice if that was done peacefully. But,
I don't think that's the case, but I am
see
liberal.
The culture changing.
Well, you don't see the culture changing, but I mean, we did come back from a civil war. We did come back from McCarthy era. We did make our way through a lot of very shady things, in order to get to a place today that, while we do have some problems, is better than the days we were in before.
That's true.
So, I mean, you know, there's still hope for us, and don't take that away from me.
Yeah, all right. I guess I won't, and I can't see the future, so who knows? Maybe it's just hard to see where stability will come from, but, you know.
Right. Yeah, well, hopefully it'll come from people just being fed up and saying, hey, I like my neighbor, and I'm tired of this BS. And I don't really care about what the TV said. It's like I was about to say, I'm a liberal guy. But I'm not running out buying Democrat shirts. I don't have bumper stickers on my car that say vote for Hillary. I voted for Hillary, but I don't need the bumper sticker because I don't really care. They're not my team. You know, my team is me and my family, and then my extended team is my town, my state, my country, so on and so forth. I don't adhere to this left-right team thing. I just tend to, when it comes down to make a choice between these two things, I tend to lean left because I agree with more of that stuff, but they're by no means my team.
Okay. Well, I think most people would agree with that.
But, they
you know,
would, but they don't seem to act like it.
I think most people who agree with that also know very little about politics and are not that involved, and so are not in charge of politics.
Are you
politics.
Insulting me? Are you insulting me?
I said most people, not
I'm
you.
I'm very educated about politics.
There are
My wife tells me about it all
moderates.
The time. My wife tells me about it all the time. I'm very okay,
just,
so...
I'm just saying, if the moderates want power, they gotta, you know, play the game.
So our guest tonight is a ghost and dark history tour guide in New Orleans. Our guest tonight is Jonathan Weiss from the... Weiss. Jonathan Weiss. from the Jonathan Weiss Tours down there in Narlands, or however you're supposed to say it. I'm no good at that because I have never been there, but I hope to
go. We're outsiders, so if we could convincingly imitate people who are from there, that would be creepy.
Yeah, I don't think I'm there yet, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. So stick around. You're listening to Radio Wasteland.
Thank you. Turtle Bay Exploration Park is back open for exploration. See the West Coast Biennial Art Exhibition, featuring diverse pieces by artists up and down the West Coast. Enjoy the Visible River Aquarium, Caverns Exhibits, Parrot Playhouse, and more. There's something for everyone to discover at Turtle Bay.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of the Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at estategranite.com.
Orchard Nutrition Center, your local neighborhood health food store. We are dedicated to the healthy lifestyle, and we strive for a high standard to carry organic, GMO-free, and clean, healthy products.
Because you are worth it.
Because you are worth it.
Because you are worth it.
We have certified nutritionists on staff that take pride in helping you. Supporting local, we are all in it together. Orchard Nutrition Center, Cypress Square Shopping Center, Reading.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
This is RC from Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Today we're talking about Trinidad's Espiritu Series No. 2, crafted with tobaccos from Brazil and Nicaragua and wrapped in an Arapiraca leaf. Espiritu No. 2 produces a harmonious, medium to full-bodied cigar with extraordinary zesty complexity and earthy notes. Come by the shop and pick up your Trinidad Espiritu No. 2 today, 2143 Hilltop Drive, Reading.
Turtle Bay Annual Auction is going virtual. Now everyone can take part in bidding on exciting items and supporting Turtle Bay. Bidding begins March 11th. Tune in for the live virtual watch party March 20th on Facebook Live or YouTube. Go to turtlebay.org and click the online auction banner to register and learn more.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland. All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest tonight is Jonathan Weiss, and we're going to be talking about New Orleans. You know, New Orleans is one of those things that I think is in all of us as mysterious and made all the more so because of media since then, like Anne Rice and stuff like that, you know. So it not only has the sort of melting pot history of weirdness going on, but it also has that that Santa Cruz vampire level that's been thrown up. No, thanks to other stuff. But why don't you tell us a little bit about you, Jonathan, and what you do so we can get this started?
Sure. I've been doing tours nearly 20 years in the city, which makes me pre-Katrina, which is kind of cool and kind of sad. It's cool that I'm one of the – maybe there's 20 of us that are pre-Katrina still up in the whole city. And I get to be one, and three of the other guys work with me. So, you know, there's a cadre of the old hardcore guys who really – know the history and the folklore and the legendary. I kind of want to express it all. They're not mutually exclusive. The history of our city is very strange and very blended with folklore. And I think it has to do with who we were, the people we were, and the waves of immigrants that came to join us. And also just the area we're in. The city and the area we're in had a lot of folklore and strange legend, even before the freshmen showed up. So it's pretty cool to be able to work all these things together, and it's pretty easy to do it if you know what you're doing here.
You know, you brought up Katrina and being pre-Katrina. Did Katrina wipe out any of this history?
Oh, yeah, tons of it. I mean, the original French city is the French Quarter, mm-hmm. and the original French neighborhoods are the two neighborhoods downriver of the French Quarter. And then the only other neighborhood the United States would know would be the Garden District. Ironically, the historic neighborhoods and Garden District didn't flood. So we were spared because the French built above water, and the Americans, when they built the Garden District, just happened to build on a ridge high enough that it didn't flood. But the rest of the city was essentially a floodplain and completely was soaked. I mean, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I want to say that the day before Katrina, that'd be the 28th of August, 2005, there were 175,000 historic properties in the city of New Orleans. And by dark fall on the 30th of August, there were 75,000 historic properties in the city of New Orleans.
Wow.
And the rest were completely wiped out, almost without exception. Some were heavily damaged, and they've been able to be brought back into service, but the majority of houses, we're talking about homes in many cases, were completely destroyed, as in demolished. You know, Americans are starting to see what a flood can do now. We're starting to see that kind of imagery more often. But like a tornado leaves nothing but a foundation, flood does the same thing.
Right. Yeah,
especially with, like, older buildings, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they were wonderfully sturdy buildings, but, I mean, when you got tons of water hitting a, you know, a 1,000-foot frontage, it's just going to go away.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the reality of it. But it really did a lot of damage to our city's history and culture because our neighborhoods are the repository of our city's history and culture completely. You know, like Brooklyn used to be, like a neighborhood, right?
Yeah,
it was a very neighborhood city. Philly was a neighborhood city. Boston is, to some degree, still a neighborhood city. New Orleans was the same way. So when you had 76, I think it was, identifiably different, recognizably different neighborhoods in a city of 450,000 people, that's small, right? That's a small city.
Yeah.
Every neighborhood had its own history and its own culture. And the people of the neighborhood were generationally repositories of that information and that kind of history. So when the neighborhoods got wiped out, we lost so much. It's really kind of harsh to think about it, especially if you're into history and folklore and things like that, because, you know, I guess one of the coolest things for me being pre-Katrina is I've been pounding the streets of the French Quarter so long that if you don't know me by sight, then you're the new one, okay?
Right. Uh-huh.
But I was here before Katrina, and a lot of the old families that were still there in the quarter, there were still a few, knew who I was and knew I was trying to keep the folklore and the history alive and kind of show the flag of respect to the city. And they gave me pieces of their own family folklore.
Huh.
And that is gold. If they don't tell me, I will never know. So that's what I really mourn, is that all these people are no longer there anymore, and they took a lot of the city's history with them. And that's kind of a heartbreaker for me.
That's devastating. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is your goal to, I mean, I know that you run the tours, but is your goal to somehow collect and archive that information as well?
I would love that. I mean, my ideal is people would come to my company because they'll just understand at a certain point, no matter what the tour is, voodoo tour, cemetery tour, history tour, whatever it is, if you go through him, he will have the best guy. He'll know the best guy for it. He'll have the person who's the very best, most knowledgeable about the cemeteries. So one of most, you know, I've got a voodoo tour where a voodoo priest leads a voodoo tour. Nobody else has one of those. So it's cool to realize, or that's the hope that people understand. It's like, if you really want to know what this really means, if you want to know the, you know, not the, the whistles and bells, but the real history, the real legend, he will know a guy. Go to him.
Right.
And that's my hope. And I'd like to kind of almost co-op with the other guys that are, you know, strong historians and people who are really passionate about the city, passionate about the culture and folklore. So at least, like you're saying, we can archive it collectively, almost if like a Lomax project, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But at least we have the stories. We can all tell the stories, right. Kind of be on the same page and inform as well as entertain. And that would be ideal. I mean, I don't know if you know a lot of tour guides, but trying to get tour guides in New Orleans to all work at one point is very much like herding cats, except for the cats are usually, you know, they'd have to be drunk and half mad, so.
Right, yeah. Well, it does seem like, you know, an interesting career choice. You know, I've always thought it was interesting, kind of like a docent of a city or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure it takes a specific personality to be able to do it, because I don't think I can do it, you know. So
it does take a very specific personality. You have to have a lot of patience.
Yeah. And a lot of willingness to, you know, retell the story. You know, I'm sure there's a factor of that is having a true love of the story enough to the point where when you're telling it your 15th time, you're still loving to tell it.
Yeah, that has a lot to do with it. But also, you know, when you have a different group, every group is new. And, it, you know, you realize that this is the first time they've heard it. Mm-hmm. So it might as well be the first time you're ever telling it. It really is in that respect. You know what I mean? So it makes it easy to do when you enjoy what you're doing, and then you have people who are really interested in knowing.
Right.
It's very rewarding like that.
No, I can identify with that because, like, you know, I have movies that I would never watch again, but if I have a chance to watch them with somebody who's never seen it, I find myself all sucked in again going, ooh, it's going to happen, you know, because you're experiencing it for the first time. You know, let's talk about some of the history that makes, I think New Orleans is one of those places that we all go, oh yeah, they got this history. But, you know, I don't know if we really know what it is. Like you were saying,
I don't know much about, I had no idea. You mentioned a moment ago that, that there was sort of a folklore to the area before the French even arrived. See, I didn't know that. So,
yeah. So what was the, give us an example of the folklore of the area before the French arrived.
Well, one thing that's very cool is the specific area where the French Quarter is, the original city, the mile by half mile city. It was very specifically picked. It was not an accident. The French spent 20 years wandering in the bayous, trying to find where the Mississippi River, they knew where it started, up in Canada, right? They knew up in that area, Detroit, et cetera. They were up there, but they didn't know where it ended. So they were trying to find the tail end of the Mississippi River, and then once they found it, they were trying to find the best place to build a military defensible city, right?
Right.
But the thing is, that was such a perfect area. The natives, of course, they knew it was a perfect area, too. They used it as a trading ground for centuries and centuries. There's an area of the French Quarter close to the river called the French Market, and it's actually considered the oldest trading post that we still use in North America as a result. But the thing that was interesting is that the Indians of the area wouldn't spend the night where we are. They wouldn't spend the night in the French Quarter. They wouldn't close their eyes, and it was the highest ground in 100 miles. Because they said, and they even tried to warn the French when they arrived, that the area was cursed. They said, do not build here, you'll regret it. And as I said, they wouldn't let the sun go down on their backs in the area of the French Quarter. They would always walk about 3 miles away, straight down the road called the Bayou Road that we still have today. And they would sleep essentially in a bayou rather than sleep on the high ground. And then they'd pack up and go back the next day for trades. But they would never let the darkness fall on the area. And I always thought that was just amazingly cool, you know?
Yeah.
Do it's we just know creepy what it was and cursed weird. With?
Yeah, well,
or is
I think
cursed
I do.
For them maybe a looser term?
Cursed, yeah, I guess it could be a looser term. It could be a looser term for us today, but
yeah, that's
I think in specific, I understand why they consider this ground cursed. And it's something I go into in my dark history tour, which I, by the way, am the only person in the city who does, because it's generally a wonderful city for the really horrible things that made us what we are.
This is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
Zip on over to Drip, now open at 2766 Falls Ferry Road in Anderson, next to Anytime Fitness. Drip features healthy and delicious drinks and shakes. Drip offers energy teas packed with antioxidants, delicious full meal replacement shakes, coffee loaded with protein, power oats, energy drinks, and so much more. Drip is open Monday through Friday from 7 to 7 and weekends 8 to 4. Stop by today, 2766 Falls Ferry Road in Anderson. Zip on over to Drip.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The View, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? All have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
It's never too late to achieve your dream, to turn a skill into a career. At Shasta College, we have late start classes right now and online classes where the commute from the couch to the class has never been easier. We're also offering 8-week compressed classes, same units, half the time. Now is the right time to upskill or reskill for high-demand jobs employers are hiring for. Find out more. Visit ShastaCollege.edu today.
I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us. You would think there would be a lot of people embracing this sort of dark history of it, because so many of the rest of us sort of associate, well, we don't associate it with being a dark place. We also associate it with being a party place, and we associate it with history and, you know, ethnic melting pot. We associate it with a lot of things, but a dark history, like you were saying, voodoo is definitely something that I feel that people kind of associate New Orleans.
Oh, yeah. With good reason. Yeah.
Yeah.
Voodoo in our city is very much alive and well. Very much alive and well.
Even today.
Oh, God, of course. Yeah. Before COVID, and hopefully soon, you know, the next couple of months, once we get a level of immunization in our city and around the United States, for years and years and years in what they call Armstrong Park, which was originally called Congo Square, is a place where slaves would gather on Sundays to dance and sing and make their own trading ground, if you will. You know, they would sell goods, barter goods back and forth to each other. And it was really, really an area of open air worship. It was open air voodoo, but they were very good about hiding it from the eyes of the Catholics around them. And then later the Protestants around them. So it's literally just, it was just across the street from the city, across the street. So to this day, until COVID, voodoo practitioners were still having regular Sundays in the square. They drum, dance, sing. They bring things they bake and sell, things like that. I mean, literally, it was exactly the way it was, as it was 250, 300 years ago. So that's a really cool thing. And like I said, my buddy who does my voodoo tours with me, he's a voodoo priest, And the reason we go, we only go on Sundays because I want people to be able to go and actually experience that and see the drumming and see the dancing and see the Veve artwork and, you know, buy some crafts, buy some food if they want to, you know, and just kind of mingle amongst people and see and watch and kind of demystify it, make it not so scary, but also explain it really as a vibrant, passionate, artistic religion.
Yeah, well, that's definitely my next question about voodoo is that is voodoo as dark as we, like, have it in our heads, or have we been historically brainwashed by the Christianity we've all grown up inundated?
I would suggest it's B rather than A. You know, the racism inherent in the Hollywood depictions of voodoo and, of course, the Christian literal demonization of voodoo has irreparably imprinted in the minds of people what voodoo is. Voodoo is – Catholicism is a lot like voodoo because voodoo is about 2.5 times older than Catholicism recognizably. Mm-hmm. But they have very similar concepts, including it's a monotheistic religion. There's only one God.
Oh, really?
But just like voodoo has, I mean, Catholicism has saints and archangels.
Mm-hmm.
Voodoo has what they call lua, great spirits, and they are analogous to saints and archangels, and they have things they're responsible to God for. He gave them tasks to perform and things to be, if you will, in guardianship over, like a patron of conflict or a patron of love, things like that. So just like in the Catholic Church, rather than going to light a candle for a saint, you just bring gifts to the voodoo altar of the spirit you're speaking to. And you're petitioning that spirit to help you with a problem. The spirit receives its power from God. So it's really not that unfamiliar to Christians when you break it down.
I mean, I was raised Catholic, and there's definitely the pantheon of saints, and that makes a lot of sense, that comparison, you know.
Yeah, if you understand Catholicism at all, it really does make a lot of sense. If you understand Wicca, it makes a lot of sense. So there are a lot of pagan religions that have similar practices to voodoo, as it was said in French.
So is, you know, I'm getting all caught up in voodoo because voodoo's interesting, but
everything's interesting, man.
Everything is interesting. But, you know, in every other state, I can imagine a huge amount of Christian pushback to any public voodoo gathering. Is there any of that there?
Usually it's not from the city.
No.
We get people who come in from Mardi Gras and other festivals screaming that we're all going to go to hell because Jesus loves us, so we're going to burn, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
The Jesus haters, the ones that are the death cultists, they love Jesus, but they hate everybody else. But those people usually come from, you know, Texas or Mississippi or Florida or Kansas or something like that. They're in no way, shape, or form locals. They're really there just to make themselves martyrs because that's kind of key to their identity.
Right.
The Catholic Church, I really don't know what the official position of the Catholic Church is. I suspect with the new Pope, it's just benign tolerance, you know, respect for different religions.
Sure.
But we actually, 2 years ago, we had the Dagba, who is essentially the Pope of Voodoo, West Africa, who came to New Orleans and visited with us and, you know, was received by a deputy of the mayor, the whole thing. So it's still very alive and very real. And it's interesting too, you know, it was easy to hide it inside the Catholic faith because they had so many similarities. That's why it survived and flourished here.
Yeah, that kind of brings up, I've always wondered, is voodoo in New Orleans sort of different than voodoo elsewhere? Is it a regionally specific thing? Yeah.
Absolutely. New Orleans voodoo is much more like the city. It's strange. It seems like voodoo, to some degree, takes on the character of where it is and molds itself in that way. New Orleans voodoo is a lot less friendly.
Yeah,
but New Orleans voodoo is much more friendly. It's much more open. It's much easier to be involved in New Orleans voodoo. It comes from the Haitian root, without a doubt. And the Haitian root is a lot more Catholic in that things must be done this way by this person at this time. But New Orleans voodoo is a little more comme ci comme ça. It's a little more loose like the city is. It's more like you're making a relationship with the spirit. It's almost like you're making a friendship with the spirit.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, totally interesting. So, on the dark history, you know, obviously we're not hugely talking about voodoo. You know, what's some of this dark history of New Orleans? You know, are we talking killers? Are we talking ghosts? we talk about?
You name it, brother. I mean, generally my dark history, I cover a variety of things. And the things, as many things as I can pack into 2 hours with a break, there's still tons of things I don't ever get to tell because we don't have the time. I really try and cherry pick things that happen in our city's history so people can understand where we were in time, if you will, as we go through the streets. We burned down 2 times within 6 years. And in the late 1700s, and those fires were genuinely devastating. To no small degree, we genuinely lost the first 7 decades of the city's history up in smoke on 2 very bad nights.
Wow.
So that alone, the destruction that was wrought by those fires, is something that's dark. The misery that followed having an entire city from 863 buildings reduced to 7 buildings in 6 hours. All the food stores, all the medicine, all the shelter, all the clothing stocks completely destroyed, and you've got thousands of people who are trapped in a bayou. That's like a horrible Hollywood, you know, disaster movie, except for it really happened.
Right.
Epidemics, slavery, of course, was big in New Orleans. People get very confused by New Orleans because we're so overwhelmingly sensual and we're overwhelmingly just constantly in your face, and it's a completely different world than the rest of the United States. But big surprise, New Orleans is the deepest part of the Old South. And so slavery in our city was very, very real and very big, so I talk about that. I enjoy talking about that. It's interesting to get people's reactions, and I think more people are happy that I'm not willing to shy away from it because it's the kind of stuff that, you know, we need to talk about it.
Yeah,
we don't talk
about
it, we hide it.
Let's talk about that a little bit. When we think about the South, you know, I still think of the South as being pretty socially segregated, although I've never really been there. Just from talking to people and watching TV, I don't know if this is a preconceived notion that I have, but I view it as still socially pretty segregated. But I kind of view New Orleans as not being that. Am I wrong with my assumptions?
No. Generally, New Orleans, I think, is probably the most well-integrated of the southern cities. And I think it has to do with our neighborhoods were predominantly class-based rather than race-based.
Right, yeah.
For example, the neighborhood immediately downriver of the French Quarter is the Marigny. That's my neighborhood. And it was part of a plantation originally, and it was made into a housing development around 1805. And the thing is, though, but not been mad at me, the man who owned the properties, just sold them to whoever had the money to buy the properties. So you had free black people, you had poor Frenchmen and Spaniards, you had German and Irish immigrants coming into the neighborhood. And so you quickly developed this neighborhood just across the street from the French Quarter's boundary that was extremely religiously and ethnically and racially integrated, mixed. Plus, you know, our traditions of our history here has to do a lot with genuine physical racial blending. People in New Orleans are very mixed blood people to no small degree.
Right. And that's one reason why I view them as so integrated is because those lines have been blurred so drastically through relationships.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because in New Orleans to this day, you can always tell when somebody lives here, when somebody just moved here or somebody lives in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
Because you say, what part of town are you from? And they say, oh, I'm from here. In New Orleans, you always say your ward or your neighborhood.
I see.
Sometimes you say you cross streets.
Right.
So there's little cues, little tricks like that. New Orleans is a funny city because it's been such an immigrant city. But it's been such a target for hucksters and carpetbaggers and people trying to make a buck off us forever. That I think a lot of New Orleanians are somewhat suspicious of outsiders to a little degree. So we always have these strange tricks, like how we pronounce words, how we pronounce street names, for example.
Right.
It confuses people and turns them upside down. And it's just kind of like, I think, almost like a vetting process to speak to an Orleanian. If you understand about half of what they're saying, you're pretty good.
Plus, you know, there's probably that apprehension because, I mean, once a year, you guys do hold one of the most famous parties in the world, and it probably does not bring in the best from around the world on a reg. And, you know, there's probably a lot of like, oh, God, it's the outsiders again.
Right Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR1460.com.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
As restrictions continue to be lifted in Shasta County, many businesses are set to reopen, and KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and KCNR1460.com wants to help spread the word. So, if you are reopening your business, planning on opening a business for the first time, or are already open for business, KCNR has many advertising packages to choose from. Give us a call at 530-605-4565 and talk to a KCNR representative today. That's 530-605-4565.
Pulse Urgent Care at 100 East Cypress Avenue would like to thank you for your support during 2020. Pulse is happy to announce they are reopening their urgent care services and are accepting patients by appointment only between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. on weekdays and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays. Pulse follows public health guidelines. Masks are required along with social distancing. Please call ahead at 530-722-1111 for a screening, appointment, and further information.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge.
California State Senator Brian Jones recently introduced the Religion is Essential Act. For future emergencies, this bill will protect religious organizations from discrimination and any health, safety, and occupancy requirements that will impose a substantial burden on a religious service.
Learn more about our ministry and get exclusive email updates by registering for The Legal Insider at pji.org.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
So we would have conventions of people who are fans of this certain series of novels would come to New Orleans, and, you know, we do tours with them and stuff like that, because it had nothing to do really with the novel, but there were a lot of the same settings. They were interested in seeing where things physically were took place, or where the author had in mind when they described the place, or this place was supposed to be the home of this and this character. So it kind of really depends on what they like. We try, you know, whenever possible, I try and tailor a tour to people's particular interests. But I honestly think the folkloric mystery of it, the kind of creepy mystery of it all, is kind of cool, you know?
Like absolutely. I said,
if there was ever a place vampires would be perfect, it'd be here, you know? This would be a natural home for a vampire.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking about how weird a lot of this stuff is, and that towns without a good level of weirdness are boring. You know, there's got to be some grit. And, you know, it seems like there's a lot of grit history. I mean, we all knew this about New Orleans, but I don't think a lot of us, it's like we just knew that New Orleans was interesting with a dark history, but I don't think a lot of us actually knew what that history was, you know? Yeah. So, I love hearing the grit, that's for sure.
Man, we got nothing but grit. We got lots and lots and lots of grit. You know, it's frustrating because there's so many things you want to talk about and you can't because you're trapped for time. Vampire Tour for me is one of my hardest tours to do because there's so much to talk about. I mean, I could take you past one, two, three, four places where people were literally murdered for blood in the French Quarter.
Now, why do we associate that with vampirism and not voodoo?
Because they have nothing to do with voodoo. I mean, they're completely different beasts.
Are they?
Remember, voodoo's a religion. Voodoo does not use human sacrifice.
Okay, but I think of like a chicken blood and stuff. I mean, I know nothing about this. These are just my preconceived notions, but I think of blood sacrifices with animals. But you're saying that people blood has nothing to do with voodoo, and this was some sort of just weird serial killer or vampire thing.
I mean, there are lots, like, you go on Wikipedia, there's a classification, vampire murder, you know. People killing other people for their blood is a type of crime.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's something I like to explore, too. It's like, am I describing serial killers? Am I describing with a blood fetish? Or am I describing what we call vampires? I mean, it doesn't make a difference to the dead whether you need the blood or you just think you need the blood, right?
Right. Yes, that's for
but
sure.
But that's also a good question to ask. What's the difference between a vampire and a serial killer with a blood fetish? I mean, you see what I'm saying? You see where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm. What does it mean? It's a little harder to fight off the former, you know.
Yeah, you
shoot
think.
Them, they don't die.
Arguably. On the other hand, you know, it's just really a fascinating thing to kind of pick it apart and try and understand where it all comes from. I don't want to get people to have the impression that I have all the answers. I got lots of answers. I've got lots of maybe so's. I've got lots of that's reasonable assumptions. I've got lots of wow, that's deeply disturbing and strange.
Right.
But I will never tell people I know the answer of things. I hate that stuff and I will not do it. But I still think it's all worth discussing. You know, I guess I require a lot of a more of a listen, question to answer tour than me just shouting words at you. You know what I mean?
Right.
I always ask people if they have questions before or after. You know, I love questions whenever possible because it lets me have an idea of what you want to know, but it also lets me explain things so everybody else can understand it better too. So it's great to do that way. It's just the vampire tour is such a tricky one because there's so much information that I have in my head, folklorically, historically, murder-wise, legendarily, that it's genuinely impossible to do the tour easily within 2 hours. I mean, it's so much information. I started doing a vampire VIP tour. I have some friends here who have a very cool speakeasy tucked away right behind one of the best jazz bars in the city, a real jazz bar. And it's a fantastically cool place, very small groups of people in. So if people do a vampire VIP with me, I give them, you know, the whole tour. But then we go over there, I get them into the speakeasy for free. And we go up into the speakeasy and then we can actually have conversation. You know, it's like an extra hour if you have any questions or do you want me to tell you more things or what, you know, what do you want to know? So it's really more of a one-on-one kind of personal thing.
That's cool.
It's very cool. I've gotten some really good response from it and I'm really glad I did that because there's just so much.
You gotta write a book. I don't know a publisher in the world who wouldn't pick that up in a heartbeat.
If I wrote a book, then anybody could pick up my book and know the things I know.
once you retire, I mean.
Right.
I've been doing it for 20 years. I'm probably not, I don't know when I'm going to retire. But yeah, okay. I've had a lot of people ask about that. And I probably
when you're on your
start,
deathbed, write a book.
Yeah. I probably should start sketching things out.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much to talk about. And it's just so cool.
It is very cool.
It's a big blessing to live in a city where, I mean, if you look at the folklore norms, the people who came here, I mean, you understand that Aleister Crowley was here, right? The Great Beast?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He lived in New Orleans for a while. It's that kind of place, right?
Right.
Oscar Wilde very much enjoyed his time in New Orleans when he was here, for example. Of course, Mark Twain was here, you know? It's a very interesting place for art and writers and people who ponder the mysterious, the folklore. But if you look at just the folklore of the city folklore has legends of witchcraft, ghosts, vampires and voodoo, and the bayous are patrolled by werewolves.
Werewolves?
Yeah.
This is new for me. Okay, where does that stem from? Or
comes from the Cajuns.
The Cajuns. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Tutaru.
Rugaru. Rise of the Trumpet of Rugaru.
Huh.
Yep.
Awesome.
Essentially the Cajun werewolf.
Man, you guys got it all down there. That's not
we really do. It's ridiculous. It's an embarrassment of riches, man.
Yeah, that's
gotta get it over there the next time I visit my brother in Georgia.
Well, unfortunately, we're at the end here. Jonathan Weiss has been our guest. Jonathan, how do people find out about your tours? If they're coming through the area, how do they get in touch with you?
It's very easy. I mean, my website is the name of my company. J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N, Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
W-E-I-S-S, Weiss.
Mm-hmm.
T-O-U-R-S, tours.com.
Jonathan.
So JonathanBicesTours.com, you can get on the internet. It's got pretty good information about all my tours, what we're offering, dates, times, stuff like that. You can purchase tickets through that. You can also send emails to me through that without a problem at all. That's probably the easiest way to do it. I could also give – hang on a second. Here. I could also give you my number. People can also call me for information at 504-356-2007. So I'm easily accessible by phone, accessible by email, the internet. And it's, you know, it's a lot of fun to be able to do what I do. And it's really rewarding when I get to share, I guess you'd say my sense of wonder at the deeply strange and malevolent place that I live in
right.
with people who are interested in knowing that it's more than just getting drunk and having beads thrown at you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, that's definitely the aspect of it that we like, and it's definitely on my bucket list of places that my wife and I want to go. And so maybe when all this is over, I'll be able to get there.
Hey, give me a shout, man. I've got some good places for you to stay. I've got some good places for you to go. I'll be happy to drag you around a little bit.
Sounds great. Well, you know, if ever you got anything you'd like to come on the show again, we'd love to have you. This has been very interesting and a lot of fun. And, you know, I don't know. It scratched all the itches that both of us always have with these topics. So serial killers.
I've been waiting since we started this show for someone to tell me maybe vampires are real. So.
Right.
I like to say I'm cautiously agnostic.
Right.
So
I like
maybe,
that too.
You know?
I like that too.
Maybe is better than definite.
All right, you've been listening to Jonathan Weiss here on Radio Wasteland. You can find out more by going to Jonathan Weiss, VEISS.com.
No, WEISS.
Oh, WEISS.
Pronounced with a V, spelled with a W.
Right, pronounced with a V, spelled with a W. JonathanWeiss.com, tours.com. We'll put the link up on the site so that you don't have to listen to me. Thank you very much for being on the show. You've been listening.
It's my pleasure, y'all. I look forward to seeing you another time.
Yep.
Take care.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.